If you want to be a thought leader, you have to start thinking. You have to have an interesting, original thought. I often think that writing is thinking on paper. At its core, that's what a book is. You read it, it changes something about the way you live your life or think or believe, and then you want to give it to somebody else if it has that impact on you. So step one, start thinking differently.
Welcome to Evolve Leadership, the arena where high-achieving leaders are challenged to redefine their limits. My name is Angus Nelson. I grew up in the United States, and I now live in Lisbon, Portugal. I'm an executive coach, and I've spent my career advising and training leaders from startups to Fortune 500 companies. And here's what I've learned. An old, ineffective leadership framework will always keep you on a hamster wheel, consumed with work-life balance, burnout, and stress. Here on the show, each week we'll help you rethink the path to achievement. We'll help you discover new principles, new philosophies to the modern leader. Look, the world is relentlessly changing, demanding a new era of leaders. It's time to redefine your limits. So enter the arena, my friend. It's time to evolve. Well, hello there. Welcome to the Evolve Leadership Show. I'm your host, Angus Nelson. Today, we're going to talk with a good friend of mine, Jeff Goines. He's a writer. He is a Renaissance man. He is also one who loves to challenge status quo. He's written a number of different books. One in particular that got a lot of acclaim was You Are a Writer. He wrote a book called Artists Don't Starve and a number of other books. But today, we're going to talk about you as a thought leader. If you want to write a book, what is it that you want to say? What is it that you want to provoke? What's the legacy you want to leave? Why would you write a book? And a couple examples in here are some of the stuff from my book that I'm currently working on that Jeff has given me some feedback on. But more importantly is you. Do you have a story to tell? He's going to help you tell that story better in a way that others want to read it. Let's jump into that interview right now. Well, hey there, Jeff. Welcome to the Evolve Leadership Show.
Well, hey there, Angus. I'm ready to evolve.
You were sitting on that one, weren't you?
No, it just came to me. I had a friend who remain nameless who years ago was on Entrepreneur on Fire, and you know, JLD would say, "Are you ready to ignite?" You know, And he like sort of preps you ahead of time. Hey, you know, I'm going to say this and then you're going to say this. And he goes, "I'm not going to say that, John. I'm not saying it."
right.
And he was like the only one who's ever not said it. Anyway,
it's perfect. Perfect. Well, we are.
Are you ready to evolve?
Oh my gosh. It's just not me. It's not me. So we are going to talk about evolving in a context. And that is, as writer extraordinaire that you are, is like, what is the context of evolving just a thought, an experience, a knowledge, and put it into something that people can read that will last beyond their time on this earth? How is it when you talk to somebody, they say, "Hey, Jeff, I want to write a book"?
Yeah. I mean, everybody says they want to write a book, or many people do. And I don't dissuade them from doing it. But, you know, I don't know. It's like saying, "I want to be a lifeguard" or something. There are steps that you need to take to prepare for such a responsibility. And, you know, the word author is the same root word as authority. You know, and so if you were going to publish a book, you are stepping into a responsibility that you should be aware of. And usually where I start with anybody is with the big idea. Like, where does, you know, if you want to speak in evolutionary terms, where does life begin? What is the spark? How are we going to start this thing? And if we don't have that, we don't have a book. If we don't have a big idea, if we don't have something that feels exciting to both the author and the potential audience, then we're not there yet. We have not even really an idea, you know, We've just got a desire, and that's good, but that's not a book. And often people say, hey, I have a book, you know, I'm working on a book, and I already, you know, I've got an idea for a book, and I already know what the title is. And I usually try to nicely say, no, you don't. And who cares? Like, that's not where you start. You don't start with the title. That's like, I'm going to be a painter, and I've got this awesome idea for a painting, and it's called, I already got the title. It's called the Mona Lisa. It's like, well, let's hang out. Like, let's paint it first, and then we can decide what we're going to call it. And the same thing's true with a book. So you don't start with a title. You start with a big idea. That big idea always needs to challenge your audience's assumptions in some way. And then you can kind of begin to scaffold it and start building out a structure around it and figure out what this thing is.
So I'm writing a book. You're helping me with a little tidbits of your expertise. We did a little brain dump, and I'm trying to write this book on confidence. And I know that that's something a lot of people struggle with, is like, I want to do this thing, but I doubt myself. I want to step into a thing, but I don't know if I have what it takes. I don't know if I'm worthy. I don't know if I deserve, you know, this income, this possibility, or whatever. And confidence is a thing that often comes up in some form or fashion. Call it imposter syndrome, fear of failure, fear of success, whatever. And so as we were talking, and I was like, oh, I'm thinking confidence. And then you basically said, well, yeah, that and we started breaking into a bigger idea. Like, kind of reverse engineered our conversation. Like, how do you look at that in the context of what is a big idea? And just some of the other things I'm thinking of too is like, what does that look like in context of what are you going to do with this book too?
Good way to think about this is kind of a series of questions. And, you know, our conversation about that started in a bar in Nashville a few weeks ago and then continued today on a Zoom call. The questions that you need to ask yourself, either need to ask yourself or that I essentially asked you, is question one, what is it about? So, you know, we might say your book is about confidence. And we just start with some general subject that we assume people are interested in. So this is about confidence. It's about creativity. It's about business, money, whatever. So you pick a subject, right? So question one is, what is it about? Question two is, what do most people say about that thing that you're going to disagree with? Because a big idea, as I said before, is an idea that challenges your audience's assumptions. So if you don't have an idea that isn't going to challenge people's assumptions, then you don't really have a book. We've heard people say things like, well, everybody said it before, but it hasn't been said by you. That's not enough. It needs to not just be somebody else's ideas in your voice. It needs to be somebody else's ideas in your voice with some new creative spin. And it doesn't have to be revolutionary. It doesn't have to be world-changing. I often think that most big ideas are about 80% old, 20% new. Most of how ideas evolve, you know, much like the way we could say life evolves, is it's very efficient. It's a very efficient process where if we experience too much change dramatically, if the brain experiences too much change dramatically, it doesn't take hold. This is why crash diets don't really work. You know, you lose 30, 40, 50 pounds, and then you gain it all back because your body actually reaches certain set points and it wants to get back to that. I mean, maybe you know what this is like. I certainly know what this is like, where I'm like, you know, crash dieting my way through losing 20 pounds or whatever. And then I'll notice over the next, whatever, you know, month or two or three, that I gradually just start putting it back on because I feel hungrier, or like my body actually wants to be in a certain state because it's used to being that. This is not a bad thing. This is a really, really good thing. This is how your body stays alive, is it doesn't experience too much change too quickly. I have a good friend who's basically a neuroscientist, and he says when we're retraining our brains, we're creating new habits basically, when we're retraining our brains to think and act differently, he says all you ever want to aim for is about a 5% change. So sometimes when I'm in, you know, a fight or flight triggered sort of state, you know, I'll text him or I'll call him and say, hey, I'm having a hard time today, need some help. And he'll kind of walk me through basically a series of bodily exercises, you know, and there's silly things like, do a, you know, raspberry with your lips, you know, drink some water, swallow. There are certain things that your body can do that actually calms your brain down, because they're not things that you would do if you were actually in danger. If you were actually in danger, you wouldn't swallow. You would run, you know, you wouldn't go, you know, these are silly, superfluous things. And so when you do this, you're actually telling your brain, I know it feels scary, but we're okay. And whenever he walks me through one of these silly exercises, he goes, how do you feel? I go, not great, but I feel a little bit better. He goes, that's all we're going for, is 5% improvement. Because that's all your brain can handle. If it's too much of a dramatic change, it can't register it. And it won't hold. That's true for an idea as well. I love the movie Inception, where it's one big heist movie and they're trying to inject one idea into a guy's brain, basically through sneaking into his you know, subconscious through a dream. And they want the idea to take hold. And it's just like one positive phrase that changes the guy's life and his businesses and the world as a result. That's what a book can do if it's done well. A nonfiction book, sometimes a fiction book as well, is it can change the way the reader sees the world by just changing one small thing, going from here to here. And so there's lots of different ways to do that, and I can, you know, kind of walk through that. But it starts with, what is it about? What have other people said that you're going to disagree with? And then how are you going to say it? Like, what is the stickiest, most interesting way that you can say that big idea? And implicit in those three questions is, who is it for? Who are you speaking to? You know, are you speaking to young people? Are you speaking to old people? Are you speaking to people in America? Are you speaking to people all around the world? And everybody wants a book to be for everybody. And it can sort of be, but you have to start with one person, one avatar, one particular person. So what is it about? How are you going to pick a fight with what most people say? And then how can you say that one thing in a sentence? And that becomes our big idea.
Yeah. And that big idea you packed into, like, most people think it's like this, but actually it's like that.
Everybody thinks X, but what's actually true is Y. Right. So everybody thinks that obstacles prevent you from getting what you want, and that they should be overcome, or they just are what they are, right? Most people think obstacles keep you from getting to your goals. But Ryan Holiday would say the obstacle can be the means of you accomplishing your goal. The obstacle is the way. So that is the big idea. Now, in that example, the big idea became the title, but he didn't start that book with that title. He started that book with that idea. And actually, the publisher wanted to call that book The Way. They just wanted to call it The Way.
Yeah.
And my personal opinion is that book would not have been as big of a book if they hadn't chosen that title. The obstacle is the way.
My family was part of a cult called The Way many yeah. years ago. So I'm very familiar with The Way.
I
it's
remember,
not the way he was talking about.
I don't know if you remember this growing up in church, but we used to have these like hippie Bibles that were called The Way.
And yes.
Green Bibles, yeah. These green paperback Bibles that had these long, you know, these Jesus people with long hair on it. It was like the coolest Bible in the world. I was like, yeah, that's not as good as The Obstacle is the Way.
Obstacle
but that's
way
a good
great.
That's a good picture of what can happen when somebody's working on a book, which is most great ideas get sort of watered down into something that is acceptable by most people. You don't want that. You want the idea to, you want it to be the 20% different. You want it to be a punch in the face. You know, you want people to go, wait, what? When I was working on Real Artists Don't Starve, a book for creative people, the publisher wanted to call it The Creative Advantage. And that was my idea. That was another title I had for the book. And that was and we sold the book to the publisher under the title The Michelangelo Factor. And I would tell people, oh, I'm working on a book called The Michelangelo Factor, because I use the artist Michelangelo as sort of the central character throughout the book. And I would do that, and they would, you know, they would say, oh, cool, The Michelangelo Effect. And, you know, that's a good indicator that you've got the wrong title if you tell somebody it and they immediately tell it to you the wrong one back. And so I knew that wasn't it. But I knew I had a big idea and I was trying to work with it. And then eventually, you know, somebody said, it's almost like, you know, you're saying real artists don't starve. And I was like, yeah, that's the idea. And I went all in on that. So the big idea is everything. And you've got to start there. And it begins, you know, with those three questions. Then you distill it down into a statement. Everybody, which is really your target audience. It could be everybody that I'm trying to reach. Everybody thinks X. And that X is something that people take for granted. Everybody thinks that the sky is blue, right? Everybody thinks that you only have 24 hours in a day. Whatever it is, it needs to be something that your audience goes, well, yeah, of course. Everybody thinks that artists starve. That was something that my audience believed. But what's actually true is why. And you've got to really challenge them. And a lot of the work that I do with authors when we're beginning to work through this process is they need to think bigger, bolder, crazier, almost absurd. Like, it needs to be audacious. And if you think of sort of the spectrum of ideas from like ordinary, these are ideas that are taken for granted, to absurd, these are ideas that people will reject. You don't want it to be absurd because people will reject it, but you want it as close to absurd as you possibly can. And so usually people play it too safe. And I go, no, let's make that weirder. Let's make that more interesting. Let's make it more bleeding edge. But interesting is really the place where ordinary meets absurd. And you want to get as close to the line as you can get without being dishonest, because that's where it's exciting.
Before we continue, I want to acknowledge something important. By listening to this show, you are taking a step that many leaders are frankly unwilling to do, and that is invest in yourself. And to honor your commitment, we want to invest in you. Our research shows that elite leaders excel in six core areas, and we've developed a quick 2-minute assessment to help you highlight your strengths, uncover your blind spots, and see how you stack up against other top leaders. You'll get a personalized report that pinpoints the areas you can address to evolve into that next level leader. So, to see where your leadership stands, go to rankmyleadership.com. Now, back to the show.
So, when we have leaders that want to, executives, founders, blah, blah, they want to be the thought leaders, quote unquote, thought leaders. And so the only way to do that, oh, I've got to write a book, and then that's going to get me conference speaking, and that's going to, you know, make me my millions. I'm going to sell a bazillion copies, blah, 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 which the percentage of people who actually sell a bazillion copies is microscopic. But it is the doorway. It's kind of, I've heard it said that a book is kind of like a business card. It opens doors for you. And if the book sucks, well, then what of it? So when someone wants to be a thought leader, the thing that they want to share is something that is more than just little tactics. It's got to have some sort of, if I'm hearing you correctly, like a belief, a shift of perspective.
If you want to be a thought leader, you have to start thinking. You have to have an interesting, original thought.
How novel.
Yes, you're right that being an author can open doors. However, as we both know, the barrier to entry to become an author is much, much lower than it used to be. Mm-hmm. There are over 10 times as many books being published each year than there were 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's just a very, very competitive space. You and I got together recently when you were in town, and you know, handful of like friends and colleagues and, you know, clients of yours got together, and everybody got together. People started like throwing their books down on the table. Yeah. Like, we were sitting with a lot of authors.
Yeah, yeah.
So this idea that, you know, you're an author and that's a rare, exceptional thing, it's not so much anymore. It's still unique. Not everybody's an author. But more and more people are. And so the challenge of writing a book is not that hard anymore. You can do it. And so as a result, there are just crappier books out there. And so if you're going to stand out, you've got to stand out. You can't just like compete with everybody at the same level that they're competing. You have to get better than they are. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways to do that is to think better. I often think that writing is thinking on paper. And so if you want a better book, think better thoughts. And the problem with most, you know, business books, self-help, personal development books is people are just regurgitating other people's ideas. Mm-hmm. I think the way that Simon Sinek did it is not a bad way to do it. He did not start with a book. You know, people say a book is a business card. A book is not a business card. You know what a business card is? A business card. That's what yeah. And if you're still using business cards
to do business.
It's a whole
other conversation.
You know?
Yeah.
God love you. No, it's a book.
Yeah.
And it should be given, you know, the level of respect and authority that books have carried, you know, for the past 500 years since the invention of the printing press. These are Seth Godin calls a book a shareable idea. It is a physical version of an idea that you can give to your friends. When you and I got together, I gave you a book. I love this function of books as, hey, you know, I read this book called Make Your Bed and it changed my life and I just want to give a copy of it to you. Now, there's lots of different kinds of books, but at its core, that's what a book is. You read it, it changes something about the way you live your life or think or believe, and then you want to give it to somebody else if it has that impact on you. So step one, start thinking differently. Simon Sinek didn't start with a book. He started with a TEDx talk. You know, he was this like business consultant coach guy, and his idea was not called Start With Why. His idea, if you go back and watch that TEDx talk, is he called it like the golden circle or something. You know, this, it did not become the thing, but buried in that talk was this idea, you have to start with why. Most people start from the outside in. They start with what, you know, what and then how, and then they get to why if they're lucky. He goes, you got to start from the inside out. Why and then what and then how, or you know, however it goes. So you have to start with why, and then it became the book, and then he became, you know, a super megastar. But you start there. You start with something interesting. And how do you know what's interesting? Well, you actually have to study the thoughts of other people. You have to pay attention to what has been said before. So what is it about? Who has said it before? How do you disagree with that? And then say it in a sentence. Say it in a really good, you know, Don Drapery, wordsmithed slogan kind of sentence. I just finished teaching a group of authors this process. We basically spent a few days walking through this. And I said, you know, it's an election year here in the US. Think of your book's big idea is like your campaign slogan, Make America Great Again. Yes, we can. This should be something that does two things. One, pisses off everybody that doesn't agree with it. Like they should, like people hear Make America Great Again, they're pissed about it, you know? And it should galvanize the people who want to believe that's true. And so when I was working on Real Artists Don't Starve, I was sort of field testing this idea, and I would tell a group of people, because I was nervous. Obviously, that's a strong title. I'm a nice guy. But I did agree with it, you know, and I didn't want to piss people off. But I also didn't want to say something too safe that it would be forgettable. And so I was field testing, you know, ideas and asking people questions. And I went to a conference that I was speaking at, and I was working on the book. I was like, I was staying in this room, this like it was like a cabin, like with a bunch of other people who were attending the conference, and I was like working on the manuscript in between sessions, and I asked this guy who was my roommate basically, and I didn't know him, and he was a creative director of an ad agency in New York City, but he really wanted to be an artist, but he couldn't do that because he just had a kid and, you know, didn't, you know, felt the challenge of being responsible for another human life, you know? And I said, hey, what do you think about this? I'm thinking this is like a potential title or idea for the book, you know, Real Artists Don't Starve. What do you think? And he was like, yeah, man, I would like read that. And I'd be like, this guy's full of crap, you know, but I'd read it to like prove him wrong. Yeah, yeah. And then I'd be like, oh man, he's right. And I hate him for it. You know, like he got really, he's like got this New Jersey accent. It was really fun. And I was like, oh, cool. And then I would ask somebody else and I'm like, no, that's, I don't like that. And I knew that it was going to evoke, you know, a visceral reaction, you know, on one side or the other. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was a bet, it was a risk. And And it paid off. You know, I was glad that I did it. But you want an idea like that. And it doesn't have to be contentious, doesn't have to be controversial, but it needs to be powerful for you and the people that you're, you know, wanting to reach. You know, for, so for example, make your bed. Simple, you know, it's not it's not a challenging idea. It's not a offensive idea.
Except I don't really like to make my bed every day.
No, nobody likes to make their bed, you know. It's a simple idea. Yeah. And one of the ways you can think about what your big idea is think about opposites. So it, take something that most people think is bad and say, hey, this is actually good. Like the keto diet. You know, I grew up with my mom having margarine in the fridge and it was like, no butter, no, low fat, everything, eating Triscuits and whatever. And then, you know, 30 years later, or whatever, it's like, eat as much butter as you want. It's good for you. The keto diet blew up because there was a generation of people who were told that fat was bad. And we go, no, 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 it's the opposite. It's great for you. You should eat lots of it. So good is bad is an example, or bad is good would be an example. Old is new. That's what Make America Great Again is. Something very, very old is now new again. The obstacle is the way is actually a version of that, where he's taking stoicism and he's bringing it into a modern context. So we have this natural nostalgic belief that old things are somehow more authoritative than new things. It's not necessarily true, but we believe that as human beings. Old is new. New is old. You could also go chaos is order, or order is chaos. This one is small is big. Little things make a big difference. Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point is another example of that. So anytime you tell an audience, you have heard this, but now I tell you this, right? That's interesting. And you can start a religion this way. You can lead a political revolution this way. And you certainly can write a book and become a thought leader this way.
Well, you just got the recipe, y'all. If you want some help with that, I would say you reach out to Jeff. Jeff, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom. If someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can do that?
Shoot me an email. If you have a question about this, if you feel like you have a big idea, I love to, you know, hear people's ideas. I'll, you know, give me a little bit of time, but I'll reply to it. You can email me at jeff@freshcomplaint.com. Fresh complaint, just like it sounds, .com.
I love that. Website, by the way.
That's what I think a book can be. You know, it's a new way of picking a fight, a fresh complaint.
Well done. Well done. All right. Thanks so much, Jeff. As we wrap up another episode of Evolve Leadership, thank you so much for taking time to invest in you. If there's to be any sustainable growth in your company or even in your relationships, you must grow first. And it's what I love to do for leaders, to help them grow, to challenge their thinking, sharpen self-awareness, to instill an unshakable confidence, and ultimately upgrade their sense of self. And we do this through our proprietary method called Agile EQ Plus, where we're leveraging agile leadership and emotional intelligence. We provide our signature training for individuals, and for businesses, we've designed a unique curriculum for company-wide learning and development. If you'd like to learn more about our training or to schedule a call, you can simply go to evolveleadership.org. And until next time, stay driven, keep climbing, and never stop evolving.